What's up? Welcome to a new episode of Movie Schmovie. This is episode number 409. My name is Steve, one of the co-hosts of the show. And as always, I'm joined by
Ron
and John.
No great quote today, John. No good.
Nothing fun voiceover, to quote from this. Usually that comes from the required viewing. And there wasn't really. I was actually watching it.
I'm John. And I'll never have my childhood back.
Right.
Good to see you both. I'm glad we got to make this work. I know, John, you were having some ISP difficulties.
A system-wide outage. Thank you, Comcast, for just like sending me that message. But like my whole family, I was telling you guys before we started recording, it's like we're embarrassingly internet dependent for our entertainment and our distraction and some of our productivity as well. So it was very much like, what are we going to do if this lasts? You know, that's the true horror film would be. What if this lasted more than a couple hours?
Right. Yeah. That's the reality right there.
Yeah.
That we live in now.
But we're back, baby. Back online.
Let me see here. Sorry, I was reading a note. So this episode, we're going to get into required viewing, which was my pick from last week, which is the Max documentary, the CNN Films co-production called Chachilla. And then we're going to talk about a trailer or two. And then we'll get into, you know, just what else have we watched this last week? Maybe each of us pick a thing or two to mention that we watch, whether it's to recommend or to hopefully not hate on, but you know, we'll talk about those towards the end of the show. I don't know. My required viewing I picked this week was Chachilla again, CNN Films, Max production. It's on Max if you have that streaming service. If you didn't watch along with us, you can check it out if it interests you after we kind of get into it a little bit. But yeah, honestly, like this is one I feel like I mentioned it last week. I'm targeted constantly for these like Max originals, like whether it's Twitter or social media. Something is always popping up in there about one of these Max originals. It's all the docs. It's the true crime things. The newer like Alex Jones one. Alex Jones one has been like popped up everywhere. I got to watch that. This one was always coming up. There's the one. There's like a couple other ones that are just like constantly in my feed. But this one stood out to me just as a pick for this portion of the show because there was a movie. I can't remember if I mentioned it last week or not, but that growing up, my brother and I, my family, we always used to watch. I feel like we even had it on Laserdisc, but it was a movie called Fortress, which was an Australian film from 1985 that had Rachel Ward in it, who was like probably the only recognizable actress in it. But literally, like after seeing the doc trailer for Chachilla, you know. Immediately, I was like, is this based on this event? And, you know, in looking for it online, I didn't find anything like tried and true, like this is absolutely inspired by or anything like that. But the story of Chachilla, like this true event that happened and what this movie Fortress was about, was like almost the same thing. Like literally, even after watching this, lot of the aftermath of the actual events. I mean, it was so similar to it. I mean, and that happening 9 years before this movie came out, I'm sure there was something about it that had to inspire Fortress, which by the way, you know, that's an awesome 80s movie. If you ever want to check out a cool Australian flick. But yeah, I don't know. Just this idea of this kidnapping of all these kids and, you know, on a school bus and like, where'd they go? They just went missing and, you know, the story around their escape and the impact that it has on the community, you know, the town, the economy, like the people's personal lives, their childhoods, like, I don't know. It just seemed really interesting to me. And like, I just, you know, thought it might be a good pick. We haven't really done many, if at all, any documentaries for required viewing. I'm sure John could probably tell me if we did or not, but
I don't have the list in front of me, but it is a good point. We don't do that many docs.
So it seemed like a good option, being that it's pretty recent and on Max, which is something that seems like at least a few people have. Had you guys ever heard of the event? Have you ever heard of the doc? Where were you all before kind of I picked it last week?
Ronald?
I vaguely remember the 40 that the special that came on, like the update of the kids. You know, where are they now? It was like I was like in the 90s or early 2000s. There was a news, like a 50-minute thing that came on TV that I specifically remember. 48 Hours did the name of it. I actually put it on the server. Remembering the Chowchilla kidnapping, and they kind of talked to the funny enough, a lot of the footage from some of the interviews that they had that were like, I guess, some of the follow-up from, you know, how are they doing as adults kind of came from this documentary, directly from it. I specifically remember it. I remember it. But
wow,
that's it. That's it. I mean, I didn't know. So I completely didn't know what the event was. I just remember that it was one of those, like, not many people died from it. That, you know, it was vague. Like, I hadn't looked into the event. I just remember the news saying, like, you know, we're catching up with these. I thought that the location was out of the country because the name was so weird. I thought it was like in Canada or something. I was like, this is clearly not in America. This is not.
Yeah. That's how kind of why, like, when I saw it, I thought it might have been what this movie that I recall from the 80s was based on. But
I
saw an article just now that so the movie I'm talking about from the 80s is inspired by a book about real events that happened in Australia. It was in the 1972 Faraday school kidnapping. So that movie is about an event that is similar to this event happened in California. But yeah, I don't know. It's just it is crazy because I feel like I don't know that I'd ever even heard that term, like the name of the city. Like, I don't, you know, how you mentioned like the where are they now follow, you know, I had no frame of reference for this at all, like beyond or prior to seeing the trailer for this movie. What about you, John? Had you heard of it before? Or
I mean, as a person who also probably gets targeted for those sort of true crime things or just those sorts of docs that reach into, you know, like recent history and kind of fill it out a little bit. I think I had avoided some of the stuff, like this one pops up. And I think whenever I see like kidnapping or child kidnapping, somehow it doesn't have the same appeal to me. I know that sounds strange to say as like murder. But there's something about, like, when it's a child case, I always have to kind of brace myself for it, I feel like. So I don't know that I've always sought out the things that have crossed my path that, like Ronald mentions, where it's like a different news magazine has probably approached this or covered it, because I knew that name from that. And I knew there was this kind of mass kidnapping that involved a school bus. But the details beyond that were very, very fuzzy for me. So all I knew was similar to what Ronald said, that, like, oh, nobody got killed. Which is like an amazing, remarkable thing about this story.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But, you know, it's more of a kidnapping and escape and survival tale. And then the way the doc plays it, you know, it does that little where are they now thing. It tacks on this whole last section that really is about the aftermath of something like that. And, you know, the very interesting note that this case, the way the people, the survivors of this case were treated, sort of became the backbone of the way we now talk about, or one of the things that became the backbone of the way we now talk about trauma response in terms of counseling people who've been through something horrible, especially kids, but noticing that people are maybe not even the best judge of their own okayness after going through something like this was a really,
that's a great
point. Now that's an obvious thing to think about, but to think that people had to come to terms with that just like surviving and being without a scratch that's great, but it's not, that doesn't mean you're
okay.
You're fine. And I think that's something that, again, was, I kind of grew up in the era where people started to notice people's feelings. It's like growing up in the 70s into the 80s is when it's like, oh yeah, feelings aren't just something to like make fun of someone for having. And I think that now it seems obvious, but also that's, you know, that's 40 years ago that we're talking, 40, 50 years ago almost for this case. So yeah, it was even if I knew certain things, it still didn't feel like something that was old hat to me. I'm almost surprised people don't talk more directly about this case by name, because it is such a strange case. I mean, Steve, you were the one who chose it. Like, I think when you were suggesting it, you were kind of hinting at the fact that just the story that unfolds is unusual. So maybe talk a little bit about, like, how did you feel when you kind of dug into this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the big things I you know, it's weird to watch a documentary and be like, I enjoyed this, but it's a big takeaway when you see a movie or a documentary film like this, where it is an opportunity to learn more about a pretty crazy event that happened that, you know, I think even the trailer, it's like, it says something about like that you've never heard of. Mm-hmm. Like it's such one of those things where, like, you know, if something like that, and the perspective I had in my mind was like, crazy shit like this happens all the time now, and it's completely consumed by like the news media cycle, you know, like horrible, yeah, horrible events happen, and within a month people completely forget about it, you know. And like in the 70s, when this is happening, in the way that news is shared and reported and things like that, and something becomes like a national story, trying to remember the perspective, like, of what level of type event would that have been to reach that height, you know, or mm-hmm. to reach that kind of reach across the country or across the globe. So, you know, watching this and seeing how crazy the story was, and, you know, like, it's so crazy, but it's kind of like, it's so short lived too. Like, it wasn't mm-hmm. like a long event, you know,
yeah,
in the grand scheme of you know, abductions or kidnappings or, you know, standoffs or searches or things like that. Like, it all kind of unfolded fairly quickly, but it's the impact past that really has had like the staying power, which is why I personally felt like when it got to the point of checking in with everybody, like, as interesting and crazy as the story was, I felt like the real takeaway for me was like, you were kind of getting at, John, was like this idea of like, how do you know if you're okay, you know? And, yeah, you know, yeah, they all got out unharmed or, you know, scratches, whatever, you know, there was no fatal experience or anything like that. But like, you know, for the course of your life and like how the town responds to it and responds to you was like the piece that impacted me watching this, because, yeah, in the time that this took place, you know, the idea around, you know, therapy and, you know, trauma response and things like that, It wasn't what it is now, you know, anywhere near what it was now, even if it was something there was starting to be a conversation around. So, like, I don't know, that was really sad to watch a lot of that stuff. I think about a child going through something like that, and be like, the first thing you say, like, you know, are you okay? You know, when if you can just imagine, like, when these kids are coming up to this guard, and it's like, you know, and all this EMTs or everything are coming in, and it's like, I can't imagine the response when everybody looks like they're okay. You know, do you know what I'm getting at? Like, yeah, that was the thing that really stuck with me watching it, was that, like, it's an event that's crazy. It's horrible. It's traumatic. But in the grand scheme of what somebody would look in on it and say, is like, oh, but everybody's okay. You know, everybody's good.
Yep.
And, you know, it's like, yeah, but not really. And like, I think it's just like that perspective that was really interesting to watch these survivors talk about. And like really kind of acknowledge that, like, my childhood, you know, a couple of them making, you know, those statements, like, I lost my childhood when that happened, like something changed in me forever. And like, they probably didn't know that then. They've come to terms with that later in their lives. And that's kind of, it's really sad. You know, it kind of left the movie feeling, making me feel kind of sad about that element of it. Just like, you know, the time period in which this happened, even though it was in some cases a best case scenario outcome, you know, decades later, you realize like everything is not and was not okay, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Stuff like this is really hard for me to watch, man. Like, I have a real hard time. Like, that's, I'm not like a murder documentary person. I'm not like a kidnapping cult. Like, I just don't, I think some of it just has to do with like the human condition. Like, it feels like, it's like when you find out that a horror film is based on a real thing that happened, you're like, why the fuck would they do that? Why would they make this like a funny thing or a scary thing? And sometimes it feels like when I hear people talk about them, documentaries like this, it's never quite about the thing. It's about how it makes them feel. And I mean, you know, I don't, what about the people? Like, you know, it's just like, I'm watching this thing with Gerard Carmichael, and there's this like masked man in the documentary, and he says like, how much control do you have over this? Like, right. The stuff is here, people are being taped. Like, how much are you giving for this? You know? It's like a right. very weird conflict that I have with documentaries. But also, like, these stories have to be told because you got to know that, like, there's an evil like this that exists in the world. And I understand why people take it in, because it is good to know, you know, even with the quiet places that we're in, there are some evil fucking people all over the place. Doesn't mean yeah. that the world isn't beautiful, but within the beauty is some nastiness. And, you know, yeah. you have to have an awareness of that. So, I, you know, for what it's worth, you know, I took it in, but it was hard for me, man. This was like a whole ordeal going through watching it. My heart was like racing the whole time. I shouldn't have that feeling when I'm watching a thing, but
it's hard to watch, especially because I'm sorry if I cut you off, but like
no,
you have a child. Like, we talked about this before, like we talked about Prisoners, kid, that movie. Yeah. Like when I picked that as my movie when we had our big episode, like mm-hmm. watching that without a child, watching it with a child, watching this as a parent, mm-hmm. you know, like, and talking about the trauma of that, like what you're mm-hmm. kind of getting at. It's just like it is a whole different experience, which goes without saying. Like, you have a child now, and it's like, I can't even fathom the thought,
yeah,
of something like that happening to my child.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, I can't even. I don't. And
this
even
is
wanna.
Again a situation where everybody survived, but still, even the 30 this hours of wondering, and that's kind of what I mean about child kidnappings, or like, you know, we'll be going through, like, you know, looking for those to watch. And again, I understand why people. I think the same reason why you don't like true crime stuff, Ronald, is the reason why a true crime person likes it. It's just a flipped polarity, but it's the same relationship with the same idea of, like, there's something about it that gets to you. And I think some people are like, I want to look into that. I want to, like, answer questions and think about it to get my way through it. And then other people might say, I don't need to think about it. The idea of the reality in my life is bad enough. Like, or especially people who've been exposed to something, you know, more trauma are like, no, I don't need to watch horror because I've had, you know, I've lived through an experience like that. So I understand why people have that aversion to this kind of thing. And I feel it when I'm looking at the description and it says, you know, because, you know, if it's a child kidnapping, you're going to be thinking about the parents, and especially as a parent, you're going to be thinking about your kid, and you're going to be thinking about what you would do. But also, if it's a documentary and nothing much happens in it, you're sitting there going, what's going to be the punch in this thing? Because, you know, they don't make a documentary usually about situations where, oh, and then it was a great thing for everybody. So you're sitting there going, kind of what you said, Ronald, is this human trauma? Am I watching it? Yeah. And I think there is a big difference in feeling a reaction and thinking about the human toll in a way that is, like, empathetic, and in, like, I don't even know who does it, but laughing and enjoying it and thinking it's fun. I think that side, there is, like, a true crime fandom that's like that. And I don't identify with that, you know? Mm. But I do have a little bit of, I don't know if it's a morbid fascination with some of these things, but I totally feel what you're talking about, Ronald, this whole idea of, like, what are we doing here? Like, what is this? Is this being turned into entertainment? And if that's what's happening, why is that a thing at all? But I think something like this, you know, the question you have with any of these things is, what are they adding to the conversation other than just the sordid details? And I think this one answers that question with, you know, sometimes it's just focusing on the victim. A lot of times the documentary will give you the full life of the victim and really make you feel the tragedy of their loss. And so we're not like aggrandizing the criminal in a lot of cases. This documentary does a similar thing. It almost treats the story of who did this and why as like a mysterious afterthought, and really digs into that idea of how are the people that went through it faring years later, and specifically Mike Marshall, the guy who seems like he was kind of one of the saving graces of the day, and how he didn't really have any recognition for a long time. I think that was an interesting, I feel like this documentary skirted over some of the stories that maybe would have given it a real hook. I don't know if you felt that way, Steve, that, like, with reenactments and different things, I mean, it felt like a very familiar, like a nicely done kind of Dateline level approach at this. And I wondered, like, as much as I didn't want to watch four episodes of this, I did think, oh, if this was two or three episodes, could they have broken in a little bit more into some of those things? Because that was a little bit of a story to me, the idea that Ed, whatever his name was, the one adult who was there, that he kind of had the the fame, so to speak, of saving the day. And then it was, I mean, he was very useful in the day, but actually it seems like he kind of fell apart in a way that the kid, Mike Marshall, didn't, which had me thinking, and I hated to say this, there was a point in this where I said to Nikki, this would be a great movie. Like, especially the day of and the escape and everything. I mean, it could really, like, knowing everybody survives would make it a very almost uplifting kind of movie, you know. But then as I was thinking that, then this documentary really dwells on how nobody's really okay at the end. And so I don't know, I think that's what it adds to the conversation. It's just that thought of, like, can you ever really say, oh, that person survived, and they're, you know, and assume they're on the other side of this crazy thing that happened? Because the other thing is, we know probably from our own experience and maybe people close to us, trauma can come in all forms. Every level of trauma could be the worst thing that ever happened to you. And that can be pretty rough. But what these kids went through at such a young age, I mean, you couldn't even process at the age these kids were going through it. So it would be kind of like the thing of nightmares, you know? Absolutely. Yeah, the one kid who was like, they look like demons to me. That's made it seem so horrifying, you know? And then that guy, obviously, he had like a religious framework for what he was talking about. But just imagine being a kid who thought, you know, what's happening?
That's the other thing too. Like, that's what, you know, mentioning like the town, you know, what the town, you know, the doc's opens talking about, like, somebody makes a joke of, like, you know, this is the rare town that has more churches than bars, you know, like, you know, and all these kids like have this faith, you know, a Christian background. And so, like, yeah, hearing those kinds of descriptions come into play definitely is a fact, or is kind of influenced and, you know, kind of predicated on like how they are growing up in that town, with it being the way, you know, that they describe it earlier in the film. But yeah, I don't know. Like, it is interesting that you say like this would be a movie. Like, it does feel like that kind of like a, you know, a narrative or a dramatization of it. But yeah, I would also recommend checking out that movie Fortress that I mentioned earlier.
Oh, I'm definitely going to check it out.
So there appear to be three movies named Fortress. There's a 1985 movie named Fortress. There's a 1992 movie named Fortress. And there's a 2021 movie named Fortress.
Is the 95 one, is that the Christopher Lambert one?
92 is Christopher Lambert. 85, I believe, is the one you're talking
85
about.
Is, yeah, that's the Rachel Ward one. That's the one that's about the school kids. And like, it's creepy. Like, the kidnappers wear like animal masks, like a goat, a lamb, like, and yeah, it's wild. Like, and they like hide the kids in like a cavern, like rock system. And they, you know, the whole escape is like, it's way more, you know, especially reading that I did find something saying that it was based on a different kidnapping event in Australia. But, yeah, a great like little Australian movie that I feel like we watched all, for whatever reason, like it was like an HBO movie. Like, we watched that shit all the time growing up. Wow. And it's one of those things, like, in my hunt for like VHS and DVD copies of films that I couldn't find, I have a VHS copy of it somewhere that I was able to find. But yeah. That's, I mean, yeah, this is on Max again. This is called Chachilla. Who's next?
I am next in the rotation of required viewing, and this will be a little bit of a tease of our next episode. I decided to sort of stay on brand, on theme with our next episode, which is going to be episode 410. Anyone in Baltimore knows that's the area code for Baltimore. So we're doing a Baltimore-centric episode, which we're being very loose with it, but we're just going to talk about Baltimore on film, in film, Baltimore, you know, movies set in Baltimore, television shows set in Baltimore, anything shot in Baltimore, kind of like the cultural image of Baltimore. So we're going to do sort of a hometown love fest, or, you know, maybe it'll be, I'm sure there'll be some love in there at least. Very Baltimore. We're going to love our town, but we're also going to give it a few licks, which is a very Baltimore thing to do. But I was looking at movies that I might want to talk about because of one of those factors above, and a movie that I've been wanting to rewatch for various reasons. Really crossed my path as one of my favorite movies that I saw on the list of movies that were shot in and around Baltimore. This movie was shot in Philadelphia and Baltimore. But it's a movie that I think will be really fun to revisit, from 1995, 12 Monkeys.
Ooh. Cool.
For required viewing. You know, this will, we'll get to see Brad Pitt trying out what he's going to, you know, do with Tyler Durden a little bit later. And I also think it's going to be fun to see like a really kind of prime emotional performance from Bruce Willis, who sadly is an actor that we may not see any more performances from, but who, you know, when you think about what he was able to do and the different things he was doing over the course of his career, I think this was a real benchmark for me in terms of what he was capable of. So 12 Monkeys. And also, yeah, like, folks, get ready. We're going to talk about Baltimore next week. And I think here's what I want to suggest, guys. We said we didn't really want to talk about The Wire because it'd be too easy to talk about The Wire the whole time.
Yeah.
How about if we all just pick one favorite moment from The Wire to just mention, maybe we'll talk about The Wire for a
few
minutes.
I'm all right with that.
And then we'll move on from it. Because it feels wrong to not celebrate The Wire. But we know that everybody, if you want to say Baltimore, just watch The Wire. That's too easy. You know, everyone should watch The Wire already.
I get you.
So yeah, so we'll be talking about 12 Monkeys and a moment from The Wire, and then a bunch of our favorite Baltimore stuff on film, in film, around film.
Where was 12? I'm looking at this listing of where 12 Monkeys was shot. There's a location that it has on the list here up in Upper Cove, Maryland, which is like 5 minutes from my house. And I'm like, where did they film in Upper Cove, Maryland?
And well, they supposedly when can I go the Senator Theater and the BWI as well.
Yeah, and it looks like the Walters Art Gallery as well.
Mm.
But this is like a house up in Upper Cove. This must have been somebody's. I gotta find this out now. I'm gonna report
back. Don't you remember
next week.
The suburban house that the 12 monkeys lived in?
Yeah.
It was
house, oh, the house of the monkeys. That's right.
Yeah.
That one.
Yeah. In the monkey with the shotgun. Yeah, it's like
I'm gonna find out what this is, and I'll get a photo. I'm gonna drive there, I'm gonna snap a photo, and we'll drop it in the pod in the video next week.
Okay, everybody has a favorite monkey of the 12 monkeys. Who do you like? Do you like Stinky Monkey, Minky Monkey, Dinky Monkey, or Pinky?
Obviously,
monkey?
I like Schminky Monkey. Yeah,
Schminky oh, that's right, Minky Schminky.
Yeah, you gotta love the monkey Schminky. All right, cool. Yeah, that'll be a good pick for next week, and yeah, that'll be a fun episode. What are we moving to? Trailer. I wanted to mention, I mentioned to you guys before your recording today, ooh, Neon released a trailer for their horror film called Cuckoo, which comes out in August. And there's been a lot of people talking about it for, I can't remember if it premiered at Sundance or South By. It was probably both, but just a lot of, you know, very positive word of mouth on that movie. And those that have seen it, like I know a friend of mine had saw it at a festival and loved it. But yeah, Hunter Schafer from Euphoria is in it. Dan Stevens is in it. I feel like I recognized a couple other people in the trailer, but I couldn't really place the names. But just a really, really cool trailer. And like the one clip from the trailer is kind of like a lot of people have been like acknowledging on Twitter and other social media, TikTok, like the scene when she's riding the bike.
Yeah.
The shadow of the person like running after her with the hand outreached. That's an awesome, awesome shot, man. Like if that movie has any more of that level of creepiness and which it looks like it will.
Well, they set that up in the trailer too, because there's that long shot where she's on the bike and you see the person across, just running up. Yeah. And that gave you enough of a chill to be like, if it's dark and you're on a bike and you see a person running over and you're thinking, you're like doing the math, like, are they going to make it to the road while am I going to make it past
them? Do they intersect?
Right. Yeah. And then it seems like maybe she passes them. And then to see that they're catching up to the bike is, insane. So, no, that kind of visual representation. So cool. And I think horror movies usually do well, especially with a trailer moment like that. Like letting at least one little moment play out, even if it's just 10 seconds or something. But like, you know, that's a good way to hook me in a horror, is to give me a sense of one of the actual beats rather than just a bunch of quick shots. No, that looks great. I'm so glad you made me watch that trailer. I was just today thinking Dan Stevens is one of my guys, and how much I think he can kind of do anything. So it looks like he's doing one more little slice of anything.
He's so consistent, man.
Yeah. He's fun, man.
Yeah.
What else? Any other trailers? Was there any more trailers since last week?
Well, I saw the Furiosa trailer on a big screen, and that was great.
Cool.
I had not yet seen it. And it made me think, I was debating going to the bathroom and I saw that trailer come up. I was like, I've seen this. And then I got around and I was like, you know what though? I haven't seen it the way it's meant to be seen. If you've been watching your trailers on a screen like this, then you fucking suck.
Yeah.
So I stopped.
Who are you?
What are you even doing?
Refund. Leave.
But no, that movie looks great. Get out of here. Cool. You don't deserve the movies.
I had a similar thought about episode breakdowns. It's like, hey, stupid, you watched this show, but you didn't notice the 50 things.
Oh, yeah.
The little hints here.
The Easter eggs.
The Easter eggs, stupid. You gotta notice this, dummy.
When did it start getting framed as something you didn't notice? You know, like,
yeah,
where it's like, I think that is honestly like snob clickbait. Like those of us who like to think we notice things, when someone's like,
for sure, dude.
Yeah, 10 things about the new episode of, you know, whatever that you probably didn't notice, Steve, you know, and you're looking at that and you're like, well, fuck you. I bet I noticed.
No, it's like, wait a second, Paul, let me get my list of things I noticed while I watched that and make sure those 10 are on here.
Are we going to have to get into a notice off here?
Let me see here.
The X-Men 97 breakdowns are nuts because it's like a cartoon's different because it's not like a set. Like a set, you're limited to how many things you can put in a frame. Cartoon, you can have 80 things in one frame.
Flying all over the place. Yeah. You can't
process
that
X Factor and this thing was here and this thing was here in one frame. You look, it's crazy.
It's funny.
Screw you, new rock stars. Screw you.
Yeah, you went right at him. I was like, that's the first one that comes to mind. That's
you piece of trash. No. He cried on the last one. Did you see the last one?
No.
Oh man, the one about like Jean and Cyclops. He cried.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
I didn't see the breakdown.
I saw the episode.
Oh, he bawled, man. It's weird. It was a crazy episode.
Yeah. I gotta watch those. I haven't watched them yet, but I intend to. Everyone likes it, and I believe them.
Oh, it's incredible. I don't like, though? I don't like how people are like pitting it against Invincible or vice versa.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what space do we have to be in? Like, they both are great.
Yeah. Everything's got to be a match. We have two
great things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, why is there got to be a rating, like don't which dare. Was greater than or less than, you know? Yeah. That's so annoying.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think there was any other trailers. So what else did you guys watch? I mean, what's something that you watched since last week that you want to mention on the pod?
Ronald, I know you saw Late Night with the Devil, correct?
Yes. I did see Late Night with the Devil.
Right. I saw Late Night with the Devil.
I forgot about that. Okay.
Okay.
So let's start from the beginning, man. What the hell did you think about this movie?
Well, I mean, I guess
I'd actually prefer you guys to start at the end.
Okay, let's start at the end. You know what?
The end is
pretty interesting, Steve. So you're in for something here. No, I mean, I think that the concept of this movie and my feelings about it are pretty wrapped up. Like, you know, the idea is kind of like a down the middle concept for me, as far as like it's going to bring in things that can really work. For horror, you know, the idea of a slow burn, the idea of a kind of found footage approach, the idea of a sort of era pastiche, all that stuff, period piece stuff, that all is like, it really hooked me in. I found the execution of it at times to be like campier than I thought. Like there was some kind of hammy acting and some writing, especially of the show within the film, which is like this is an episode of a talk show from the 70s where a demonic possession is like brought onto the show as like a guest, like a psychologist and a person who's possessed. And it's sort of an attempt not to do an exorcism, but just to speak to a demon as like a segment on a talk show. And it's like a ratings grab for the show. And there's a storyline that you get into that's behind that I think is actually some pretty fun kind of creepy stuff. But I think I was thinking that the sort of like era pastiche was going to be really dead on, when it was like a little heightened and a little campy. Like even when like the audience would laugh, the laugh track sounded kind of fake. I don't know. The whole thing felt just a little bit loose stylistically. And then it kind of breaks its own concept with editing into like scenes that are sort of behind the scenes, but they're shot in black and white. And it's like, I wasn't quite clear on whether I was supposed to be watching like a documentary about the thing that happened or the raw footage or what. You know, it's not like it lost me or anything. I just felt like it was a little messy. But when it gets where it's going, I think that, you know, if anyone's looking for that, what happens sort of feeling with this movie, I think it delivers in terms of like, there's a horrific ending. So I almost feel like if this had been a half hour long, like an episode of an anthology show or something, it would have just kicked ass. But as a movie, it felt a little bit stretched out. I don't know, Ronald.
Is it short? Is it like an hour and a half or?
It's like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's you know what's coming. I don't know. Like, I think it does a good enough job of kind of staying interesting in those opening stretches, but yeah, it did sort of feel like, well, we know what's going to happen and we know eventually when we're going to get there. I don't know. It's like, I think I just thought I was going to be under its spell just a little bit more. And I think the bumpy ride of the opening part for me had a lot to do with that actors coming on who were being so hammy that I didn't quite believe them as real talk show guests. Because it's not like talk shows just sucked back then, but that's kind of what you would think if watching this. It's like, this feels like a very bad talk show before things get scary. And that just was like sort of not that fun for me to watch. Do you know at all what I'm talking about, Ronald? Like, I felt like it was a slow burn in a way that I almost found it kind of cringy in a way that I think maybe was deliberate, but
yeah,
I didn't find it that enjoyable.
So I've been to like 5 late night show tapings and that felt the most authentic to me, the in-between stuff, because, you know, they shoot in real time, which this thing was done in. And then the in-between, so because they're trying to, like, map out the timing of the commercial breaks, they shoot it in real time. And then the breaks in between are the breaks in between. So it could be, it depends on what's
happening.
Typically, they do a couple of tapings in one day. So you come, if you have the later taping, I imagine that it'd be a little like looser. But if you're at the first taping, it's really tight. It's like real time, an hour. Mm-hmm. But in between, you're talking. The commercial breaks are typically where the black and white scenes would have been. So it almost feels like that part feels so real time. It's a little crazy.
No, I'm not saying that I didn't understand the real timeness. I'm saying that the way this movie starts, it's like you're watching a documentary that's presenting this footage.
Yeah.
And then you go into the footage and then it cuts to the black and white. The black and white is that can't be behind the scenes footage, but it's shot like it's documentary footage. Do you know at all what I'm saying? Like, I just felt like I was not sure what I was supposed to think of how that footage was being captured or brought into the thing or whatever.
I will sum that up by a lack of commitment to whatever it's trying to do. It has really incredible ideas. Like, when you find out what the kind of narrative that John's referring to, when you find out what it is, it's so fucking cool. But it's like half documentary, half real-time late-night taping, and then, like, the behind-the-scenes thing combined. So what John's talking about is, like, a lack of commitment to whatever it is supposed to be. So, like, if it committed to being a real-time thing, and the thing was the same, it was, like, the same color, I'll give you an example. This is such a nerdy thing. WWE is starting to do this thing now where, like, they're doing one-shots, like, in the middle of a show. So, like, they may be talking to somebody. They'll be like, yeah, I'm going to fight The Rock. I'm going to kick his ass. And then from there, they're walking out in real time out to the crowd. Like, so it's like you pivot and then the camera follows you all the way out.
Right.
If it did that, if it committed to just it being a real time thing, like a real time taping, it would have been incredible. It would have been out of this world, though. It would have been like, it's already at 97%. It might have been 100%. It may have been like, but these little things that they're doing, it's inconsistent. You're like, is this a documentary? Because it's presenting what John's talking about is like at the beginning, they literally are, you're in a documentary.
Right.
Then it stops.
They're like, now we present to you the tape from that night, you know, and then within that, it cuts away to these black and white segments that are sort of, and again, I find that if you're watching a movie, you should accept the reality of the movie is whatever you're watching. And it you know, it's like sometimes, especially if you're reading a book will pretend to be somebody's journal or pretend to be something that was found somewhere.
Right.
But then somewhere in there, you're just reading a book. And I'm not being that much of a stickler. I think what you're talking about is a lack of commitment, though, Ronald, is a little bit where the softness around the edges, even in the kind of talk show banter is because they've just written it to be like, oh, talk shows are lame. Like,
talk show
banter sucks. And it's like, that's a lot of sucky banter to watch for, and I, honestly, nothing against David Dastmalchian, if I'm saying his name correct, or Dastmalchian. The other thing that's fun to watch about this movie is just watching him take center stage in a movie like this. He can definitely handle it. I do think the script kind of lets him down a little bit in terms of like the jokes within the show that his character's supposed to be making. I don't know. I just think that stuff could have been slightly less bad. And I think the same thing you're talking about, Ronald, would have come across like even more.
For sure.
But I think as a kind of midnight movie that escalates and gets to a place, this does have that. I mean, how many horror movies have you watched where the last 5 or 10 minutes is really what people talk about? I think this movie at least delivers in that respect, even if it maybe adds a layer too many at the end. I think it at least has somewhere to go. And like you said, Ronald, the actual story of what's happening and why it's happening is something to see. Like it actually kind of, it's creepy enough and it's interesting enough that that's not the problem. It's not like it's not an underimagined thing.
Right.
You know, I think honestly, the lack of commitment, Ronald, can be summed up. I know we don't want to get into the scandal around AI imagery, but this movie caught a lot of hell online because some of the imagery in the film was generated using AI.
I didn't know that.
It's like the more to come, the little images that come up that are like more to come whenever they would go off the air and you would see like a skeleton. Like that stuff was generated with AI. And I thought
that was cool.
Well, I thought that art, like you look closely at it, knowing it's AI, of course, I look closely at them. And I was like, yeah, this stuff doesn't look that good. Like the skeleton has weird fingers going in weird directions. It's like, again, I don't even want to step in the whole debate about AI. I'm pretty opposed to it. But I didn't want to boycott this movie because of it, you know, because it
I didn't know that was a thing.
Three image people were saying we're not going to go see this movie because of it. But my whole point is just, I think the fact that the AI images don't look that great is an indication of what you're talking about, Ronald. The sort of like cool ideas without a total commitment. Because I think that even if they were going to use AI images, they could have gotten ones that didn't look hinky, you know, like I don't know.
Sure.
But I mean, I think that's a whole question of like, you know, what corners you're trying to cut on a production, an indie production. You can sort of forgive them for it more than you can like a bigger production using AI, or what's probably about to happen is a lot more stuff that's being created, you know, using it. So, it wasn't that it bumped me that it was AI. That's a whole nother discussion. What bumped me was it's AI, and it also looked kind of like they were like, yeah, this is good enough. We'll stick this in. It didn't really look like something from the 70s. I do think they did a good job in general of creating that kind of 70s look. There are some moments where like the lighting in the studio and the way it's shot really looked authentic. And there were other times where it looked sort of filtered and, you know, modern in a way that, again, I don't know if I should judge the movie based on how much it looks like it was made in the 70s. But I do think that's a factor. I would have enjoyed something that almost looked more like video that was distorted and crackly and old than something like this. I should also mention just we know people in town who've worked on a film called a WNUF Halloween Special, which is from 2013 and directed and co-written by friend of the show. He was on a long time ago, Chris LaMartina. Which is a very similar concept to this film. I was gratified to see that people online were mentioning WNUF Halloween Special in the same breath as this. Like, but that is a talk about commitment. The WNUF Halloween Special, like the commitment is the heart of the thing, because they made the whole movie feel like a videotape that was taped off the air. So they made fake commercials and everything about it is made to feel like something that was just recorded off of a local cable channel. Or a local, you know, affiliate. And even to the point where I think they were leaving the tapes around places so that people would find the tape and not know where it came from and stuff. So I think it's worth mentioning that as cool, and maybe this to some people feels like, oh, this is the upscaled version of an idea. But there were so many things about this that reminded me of the WNUF Halloween Special that I thought, oh, I bet Chris LaMartina is glad to see this out there because he's getting mentioned, but I bet it's also sort of an annoying thing to see something that, you know, is kind of walking in the footsteps of something he did, you know, 11 years ago. So I would say check them both out. I think this is a fun enough movie to see. I just didn't have the ride with it that I was expecting to have. I think I, you know, I went out to the theater to see a few films recently and they were all sort of mid and in some strange way. And, you know, this one is one of those for me.
Okay.
Cool. Great ending, though. I mean, honestly, cool.
Yeah, it
ending.
Was nuts.
And fun nuts. Fun to watch David Dastmalchian. I will reiterate that. It's fun to watch him carry a movie. He can totally do it. He's that character. He's one of those that guy actors who definitely can hold the spotlight.
Cool. What else have you guys seen?
I was going to mention, I went and saw Godzilla X Kong New Empire.
Was that what we're calling it? Godzilla X Kong? Godzilla
I guess it's X Kong, Times Kong, X. I don't know what it is.
Well, there's your Godzilla Dan Stevens sighting.
Godzilla multiplied by Kong.
Yeah.
Dan Stevens was the one I was going to mention from Cuckoo. But I love these movies, man. Like, I have no shame. I have no shame in it at all. Like,
I love it.
Godzilla Minus One for that kind of a movie that it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, what Warner Brothers is doing with this, you know, Monsterverse, and even with Apple TV having their element of it with Monarch. I love these movies. Like, they're so fun to me, and they're just like pure popcorn silliness, you know. Like, it's just entertaining and fun to watch monsters fight each other. And, you know, sometimes humans roll up on the screen and do something. You know, that's probably, you know, they all get that's the biggest criticism that all these movies kind of suffer from, even if, you know, even starting with Godzilla, excuse me, you know, where there's lots of humans and, you know, but there's like nothing interesting about them, or very few things that are interesting about them. To this one where, you know, there are genuinely minutes of scenes where there are no humans involved at all. Like, there is genuine character scenes with Kong, you know, mainly Kong.
Yeah. I saw it too. So I can.
Yeah. Which is cool. And it's like that. And that's just them like buying into the idea that we are cool with just watching that too.
And that we like Kong.
Yeah. I love it.
In particular, we're pretty big fans of Godzilla too, but like, we love Kong. Kong in this version of Kong, we've seen him take some punches to the face.
Some licks, yeah, man.
and he keeps coming back. I don't know. I feel like there's something. I think you're right, Steve, that like this, and this movie delivers on that promise of like, do you get a monster fight every 15 or 20 minutes or something? Maybe even 10 or 15 minutes. You do. And I think that's,
yeah,
like, the human stuff is very hit or miss, but yeah, like hanging out with Kong and like little expressions on his face and stuff, like you really sort of get to know, like, he even has a couple of funny moments in this, yeah, that are sort of like character moments of humor that you don't expect to see. And I think, doesn't that almost feel like that's the hook? That's like the fun of these.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's back to what you were saying, like, people, when Godzilla Minus One turned out to be so great, everyone was talking about this series like it was dog shit. And it's like, what, why do you have to pretend that you can't like both, because they are so different?
Yeah. Those two things can exist at the same time. I don't really understand that.
Right.
At all.
And I think that also, like, you know, people, you know, this movie's done extremely well. It, you know, overperformed, and I don't know how much, you know, the success of Godzilla Minus One was a part of that, but I mean, there's definitely a taste in the air. You know, there's an excitement, you know, about that character. But yeah, this film and even the last one, you know, definitely there's a lot of love shown towards Kong, you know, and I think even just Kong Skull Island, you know, there was a lot of love around that film, maybe arguably the best of this franchise. But I just think that there's so much fun to be had watching these movies, you know, and they get creative and different things to do, different fights to have, places for fights, cool places for Godzilla to take naps. You know,
that's one of my favorite gags.
I know, it's so fucking good. It's so fun. And honestly, like, Adam Wingard, like, I think he's a great guy to do these movies. Like, however long he sticks with the Godzilla and Kong films, he's obviously watching him and doing interviews for it. Like, he's having a blast, and they're super entertaining. I think they look good.
They look pretty darn good. I mean, knowing really that it's all CGI, but I mean, I was looking for bad CGI in this movie. And I would say there's not bad CGI in this movie. It's just a lot of it. If you don't like CGI, you'll say, oh, this movie's nothing but CGI. But if you look for, like, I mean, there were maybe a few moments where, like, the hair movement on the back of Kong's back was, like, almost, like, I think he was supposed to be standing in the wind. But in the long shot, it just looked like his hair was moving for no reason. Like, stuff like that can be a little too much. But if you really look at what they're trying to do, which is, like, trying to give things some kind of sense of atmosphere. Like, I love little details. Like, Steve, there's a point late in the film where Godzilla charges at Kong, and they're rolling around out in the desert. And at some point, Godzilla like is like leaning into Kong, and I think Kong hits Godzilla on the back, and you see like the clouds of dust that rise up off of him, from being hit on the back. And because of his size, it's like the it's almost like a little atmospheric cloud is formed like around him for a second. And it dissipates quickly, but those kind of details are the kind of thing, every one of these monster fights has some little detail like that thrown into them, where you're seeing like just a little, a bit of something that doesn't feel fully automated. And there's like, there is a human element, even when you're watching pixels fighting pixels in these movies. And I think that, maybe it's Adam Wingard, maybe it's just the crew of these movies, but they do look good. And especially if you know what you're in for, it's a popcorn, it's a brightly colored popcorn, roller coaster. Some of the human stuff is like a little underwritten, but at least they've got good actors there to try to really sell it.
I was going to say, it's like, it leaves a lot to be desired, but you know, you have Dan Stevens, you have Brian Tyree Henry, you have Rebecca Hall, like they're at least, you know, it's about as good as it's going to get.
Yeah.
And they're fun. And they're fun to watch, especially Dan Stevens was, I think, a blast in this.
His first scene where he comes in and what he's there to do, I thought was so fun. I mean, I didn't know any of that stuff, so I thought that was a fun reveal that he's like what his job is. And even the scene, he's kind of like Ace Ventura meets Star-Lord.
Yeah.
And with an Australian accent, I think. I'm not quite sure what he was supposed to be.
Is he? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I thought Australian. I don't remember what I thought.
But he was a blast of energy and like fun. And it's like, once again, just back to that thing of Dan Stevens, when he pops up, you know, he's doing something a little different than the last time you saw him, almost always.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, man. Like, and I definitely would recommend, if you like these movies and you're hanging out waiting, it's definitely really fun to watch, especially, and I also saw it the day it opened, so like the crowd was like super into it. Like it was a sold out screening, and I went at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday, and like people were cheering during the movie, and like at the end of the movie the entire theater was like clapping. Like that's those cool moments that you like seek out in a theater, even beyond the projection and the sound and that piece of the experience. I had a lot of fun with the movie. Obviously, the crowd that I watched it with did, and that's just like a really good feeling. You know, that communal energy of like, yeah, we all got here at the same time and watched one thing together without really playing on our phones, and like people are clapping. It's like, it was really cool. It was fun.
That's really cool.
But yeah, that's really the only like big thing that I've watched this week. I just wanted to make a point to get out and see that when it came out, because again, I really enjoy this monsterverse that they've created. And yeah, I'll see them if they keep putting them out.
Yeah, I kind of hope that we get another one, because it feels like they know, it feels like they're having fun with this world. And again, if the idea of a hollow world where there's like a sky that's an upside down world and there's monsters everywhere, if you don't want to see that, then stay away from these movies and don't complain about them. But if you do want to see that, I don't think you're going to see anything else that's quite this crazy, that's like at this franchise level. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is some deep, weird fantasy ideas. Like this is sillier in some ways than almost any other franchise, but it also, like, they visualize it so well. And I love seeing like all the creatures that are in the hollow world. Like, I just love how it's like sort of monsters, sort of prehistoric, sort of there's some evil demonic sort of creatures, it seems like, but there's also just a lot of animals there. So I don't know. And Kong gets a robotic hand in this. And
what did they call that project? What?
Powerhouse. I think it was Project Powerhouse. But also, I just, as a spoiler, I saw someone tweet about this, and I guess I'll confirm this for people, that at no point do Kong and Godzilla high five or shake hands in this movie. So you're waiting for that.
That's hilarious.
I forget who tweeted that. Well, I saw one other big movie that I was curious about, that I was, you know, kind of wanting to see. And I don't know if you guys haven't seen it, there's not much of a conversation to have about it, but I saw Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
I haven't seen yet.
Mm. I haven't seen yet.
You know, I mean, I honestly felt I missed my family. Like, I had to go see it by myself because I had a chance. And I was like, I wanted to see some stuff for this episode. And I was like, we had tried to see a movie over spring break a couple times, and Henry had other plans with like actual children that he wanted to hang out with. I should say teenagers, but they're technically children. So So I went to see it and I was thinking like, yeah, this would have been really fun to see with like my 10-year-old son and my wife and popcorn and like, you know, go get lunch afterwards. It felt very strange watching this movie as a 50-year-old man sitting in a theater by myself. But even beyond that, because I can get into some, I could watch, you know, any kind of movie and get into it. It just feels like the best parts of this movie are also the problem, which is that the opening stretch, which is like, you're just kind of hanging out with the characters and you're seeing different combinations of people. And honestly, like Dan Aykroyd is here and he's awake and he's like playing this character. And if there's a reason, I mean, if you want to see Dan Aykroyd kind of have fun doing what he loves to do, which is spout jargon and like act, he's doing that in this. Paul Rudd has some fun stuff with McKenna Grace. There's a little bit of a reluctant father role that he's kind of starting to assume. That's kind of a fun thread. Early in the film, these scenes just kind of pile up. And it took me a minute to realize, like, I was an hour in. And we haven't, like, the premise that's set up in the trailer of New York is freezing, that, like, gets going at, like, an hour and a half into this movie.
Oh, my God.
The idea of who the villain is, the name of the villain, them knowing what they're up against is way late in this thing. So as charming as the kind of hangout movie portion of this movie was, when I realized I had spent the first hour sort of hanging out and cutting to this and cutting to that, it really made me go, man, this movie is kind of messy in that way, or just like maybe it's on the screenplay level. There's not enough story. And then when it does get the story going, it reminds me of like an episode of the Real Ghostbusters cartoon, which I think a lot of people are going to love because that was the Ghostbusters they grew up with. And even that, I'm okay with that. I'm fine with this being a little bit, you know, like whatever people say about the first one being like a horror movie. People talk some shit about the first Ghostbusters movie. Like it was this thing. It didn't do everything people say it did. It's got a lot of things going for it, though, that make it special. And this movie is, Frozen Empire is like another attempt to sequelize Ghostbusters without quite hitting it. You know, they've had several different versions of it. But the problem for me is just that jumping around with the characters and how much it affects the kind of momentum of the movie, so that later when things get going, there's not really a lot of cool story to deal with once they know what the threat is. And I'll just say this as a problem. At the end of this film, guys, there are 12 Ghostbusters.
Oh my God.
There are 12 characters standing around, most of them wearing costumes and proton packs. And they literally are just kind of standing around, kind of talking to each other. It's not like a thing where everybody has a role, you know, or everybody has a reason to be there. So it's like they didn't know whether they wanted to bring back the old crew or focus on the new crew or have new characters. And the only person who really makes a dent in all that noise is Kumail Nanjiani, who's at the very least knows what kind of movie he's in. He knows he's in a comedy and he's playing a kind of comic character. You could see he's kind of patterning himself maybe after like a Rick Moranis almost kind of comedy level performance. So he's having fun. He's good. There are funny moments, but most of the good stuff is in the first half before the story gets going. And then you might question why a Ghostbusters movie is taking an hour to get its story going, you know? Again, like I said, if I was sitting there with a kid who wanted to go home and make a Ghostbusters proton pack and put it on his back, I might be having a totally different feeling about this. But it really did feel like the end was like the messiest part. The momentum, the pacing, the lines and everything just felt like they didn't, like I felt like there were reshoots, like or definitely rewrites or something. There was something going on with this movie that felt very structurally weird. You know, I've seen enough people that had a good time with it that I really do think it might be a question of which Ghostbusters did you grow up with? If the cartoon was your jam, and that's it, then this might be more the flavor of Ghostbusters that you want, you know. But but they should just not let Bill Murray anywhere near these movies. Like that half sucks. The time he seems like he doesn't want to be there, and the other half the time it seems like he's trying to recreate Peter Venkman energy at like 70, and it's just not like it's not what I want to see.
His interviews have been weird about around it too. Like he's when he's on the panel, he just seems kind of like, oh, yeah. The movie's really good. I'm like, what's going on? He didn't seem very alert. That's rough.
Just get that money.
I get that money. Oh, maybe I should talk about the things I've seen. Okay,
go ahead. Things you've seen, and then go into our new feature, Let's Get Physical with Ronald James. And so with consent.
Yeah, with consent.
With your consent.
Roku has a series that I'm a big fan of that started a couple of days ago called WWE Next Gen. So WWE's kind of streamlined their recruitment sort of process. Before, it used to be like, oh, you're very pretty. What, do you want to wrestle? Oh, you're very tall. Do you want to wrestle? But now they have this NIL sort of program, which basically is similar to like how they recruit like college athletes. Like it's like they want people right. to be athletic. They want people to be well-spoken. They want people to have experience with, you know, like public relations and things like that. So now they've kind of Triple H and Shawn Michaels have kind of streamlined the program to this really cool sort of system that works. It's tried and true. Basically, they've created maybe 20 big stars in the past like 7-8 years out of this program. Some of them being like Becky Lynch, Bianca Belair. The Miz kind of comes from the beginnings of it, like sort of like the it had a different name and stuff before, but the beginnings of that program. So it's really cool to see this journey and old man Shawn Michaels kind of completely annihilating people that are coming in talking like they're from the 90s wrestling era. Because people kind of try to come in and sound like, yeah, brother, you know what it comes down to. And he's like, cut that shit out. Like, this is not 1990. You know, create your own sort of identity. So that's really cool to watch. Reality TV show. I think it's like 7 episodes or so. Fun. Please watch it. The second thing that I saw that made me really emotional randomly, Lynch Oz. Lynch Oz is a documentary that was, I don't know how these movies go straight to Criterion. I don't know how that works. It's like some movies it takes 20 years. Some movies it's the next year that it, you know, the year after it comes out. But this is an incredible documentary that follows this sort of comprehensive look at David Lynch's obsession with The Wizard of Oz. You know, he's stated it a couple times. Well, mm-hmm. a lot of times. He says it a ton of times. Some of the, like, clicking heels in movies and things like that. Direct references and then ideologies in some of the movies that kind of follow it. And then, you know, they interview John Waters and a couple other directors that kind of give their sort of thing. Essentially, like, there's this theory, I mean, and I've heard this a ton of times, that A, most things are romantic comedies, that's one. But then B, every movie is a Wizard of Oz tale, good ones especially, but really, really good ones kind of tackle some of the tropes. And of,
yeah, you go to a world, right? Like, it's a new world.
Yeah, yeah, it's a new world. You know, everybody's looking for something they already have. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like this cool sort of thing. But David Lynch is especially embracing of this idea. And you know, it's like clip by clip, they go by like things that he references, almost direct quotes from the movies, from the movie. It's incredible. It's a really cool documentary. And what you realize is, like, I think I kind of looked at David Lynch as kind of this like super serious guy. Every time I see him talk, he's very, like, you know, kind of serious.
Well, he's very dry. But, he's deadpan. Yeah.
Yeah. Deadpan. Deadpan for sure. And what this kind of reveals is, like, he's kind of a big kid. And when you look right. at, like, the way that he approaches filmmaking and, you know, how he really wants to tell stories about good people, even if terrible people are in the middle of it. You know, you kind of see these sort of tropes in some of his movies, but, like, he is a real believer in the sort of good people win. And
well, then, at and then the if very they least, don't win, depicting good, like, he'll depict the nastiest yeah, depicting things. Good. Yeah, but he'll yeah. also oh. depict, like, almost in a naive way, he'll depict
yeah,
good
for sure,
the same
for
way.
Sure.
Right, right.
Yeah, he has a couple, like, things that he outright says that he does in every movie. He says it. They have these interviews interspersed, and he's kind of like, this is what I love, this is what I don't like, this is what I'm obsessed with, this is why I chose this. It's really cool. It's a good documentary. Now I'm gonna get into my physical media because it's weird. I just bought this, and then I got reminded of this movie through
Let's
this documentary.
Get physical. Physical. Yeah, this is physical. Come on and get physical.
I'm very excited about watching this. It's like one of my favorite movies of all time. The yearly. Another thing.
Let me see your media.
Your the media. One thing that they talk about in the documentary is Wizard of Oz wasn't a popular movie.
Oh right.
At first, yeah, right.
Isn't that wild?
The kind of they pushed it on us. They kind of were like, "Hey, this is like a thing," and then it became really popular. And then kids and adults sent in letters and were like, "Hey, what's the big deal? You need to show this again." And then they made it like a yearly thing.
You know, It's a Wonderful really Life cool. is another one that was like not a big success.
Oh my God, they talk about that
and
too.
And became overplayed because it was so cheap to license it or whatever, because it wasn't a big deal. And then it became like a staple of cable. Yeah, that's great. That's great that they bring that up. I love that.
It's really cool. They draw the parallels and even story-wise draw parallels between them. It's a cool sort of thing. The next one I have is When Evil Woo! Lurks. What an incredible horror film. I haven't watched it this version, but the sound mix is supposed to be a little better. So I'm excited about hearing the terror a little more well mixed. Now we're gonna cross the pond. We're gonna go to Europe.
No, Ron, you can't just spring that on us.
Yeah, I can't just send you.
You can't
on
just
a trip
say we're going. Right, I don't even have my passport anywhere.
Pack your bags, goddammit. We're going to London.
Gotta get a new passport.
Second Sights, The Babadook. They just released this a couple years ago, and this movie kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. I think the reason for it was it was unique, had a cool story, and it feels like I've always heard this saying that if you could pitch the story in a sentence, then you know it's one of those things that'll stick with you. You know, people are like, oh shit, like you know. I think that's really cool. And since my next one is
Ronald, just by indicated... the way, before you move on from Babadook, I just have to share this story on the podcast. It's one of my favorite things that's ever happened. Henry watched The Babadook, and Nikki was like telling me about. I came back from being out for a while, and Henry had watched The Babadook, and she said, "Henry picked something called the Boo Boo Dash or whatever."
The Boo Boo Dash. I like
the Boo Boo Dash. Yeah, it's the almost like dash. Like that should be our like. You know, when people do like the sort of sound alike movie that comes out around a movie, like it confuses you at the checkout line. You know, it's like, oh, it's only $5. I bought a copy of the Boo Boo Dash. Isn't that supposed
to
be
the Boo Boo Dash? Anyway. Oh, man. I'm really kind of getting into like smaller labels that put out stuff. Mm-hmm. Indicator is a British label. And this movie, The Batwoman, is a. One of the weirdest movies I've ever seen in my life. It's like clearly exploitation. This woman is almost always in a bikini, but she's Batwoman. And a man wants to combine the strength of a brilliant superhero, combine it with an animal, and make a supervillain that will destroy the world. But he needs Batwoman's DNA in order to do it.
I mean, so it's the only way to do it.
It's the only way to do it. Ronald. It's the only way to do it.
Yeah.
It is such a fun fucking movie. I think it came out in the 60s. 8,000 copies of this came out, and I have the 3,474th. And it is such a fun movie, man. Batwoman. And then the last one, this is kind of when I like with small labels, grab something and restore it. This is an Australian label. Umbrella. It took almost 2 months for this to come, and that is Super Mario Brothers.
Nice.
Yeah, so 4K restoration. I cannot wait to watch this. I just got it. It took, you know, quite a while. 5.1 DTS mix, and I'm probably going to listen to that. I'm probably going to watch it this weekend. And then one more, Brigsby Bear. Brigsby Bear.
Oh, yeah.
Which is one of my favorites.
Yeah, I know. I was just thinking about how when that movie, you guys tipped me off to it, mm-hmm. and it was on my top movies of that year list. I don't even know if it made it on your list, but it made it on mine. And then I, like, right after that, had a push to watch it with my family, and it just never happened. But it's like, I recently realized, like, oh, that's one that I think everyone in my house would love if we sat down and watched it. So
yeah,
I need
it's
to.
Fun movie, man.
Is that like a new transfer or any? I guess it was a new enough movie. There's no need for.
Yeah, it's a new enough. I'm not sure when this came out, but yeah, it's a Sony Pictures release, which I did not know. I want him to make more movies. I want Kyle Mooney to make more movies.
But doesn't he have something coming up that he's?
Yeah, he's got that Y2K one I was telling you guys about.
No, what?
No, I love him. I miss him on SNL. I love his, his little dash of weirdness.
Yeah,
even in a sketch where he was just playing like the neighbor, he would always throw in. There was always something going on with Kyle that was almost like an in joke with you if you like him, if that makes any sense. And then Beck Bennett, he and Beck Bennett were very, very funny together on that show.
So. Yeah. There was another guy that was on SNL that I really liked. His name was Paul Britton.
Mm-hmm.
He was only on there for like a season or two, and he had this like these sexual harassment seminars. He'd be like, "Hi, how you doing? I want to talk to you guys about." Oh, it was like sex therapy too. It was like sex therapy, but also how to do it respectfully. But he was really sleazy. Oh God, this so good. His name was Ed. Hi, I'm Ed. He didn't even have like a last name. It was so good.
Oh, he's one of those guys that still pops up from time to time on like podcasts, you know, doing like Comedy Bang Bang or whatever, I think.
I like him, man.
Occasionally.
I like him a lot.
No, there's people who are only on SNL for a minute. It's always kind of funny, you know, because then other people are there for 12 years.
Non-stop.
Well, even the people that are sort of new in your mind, like I was hearing recently, that guy Mikey Day, he's been on the show for a long time now, and it's like I was like, in my mind, he's still one of the sort of newish people who's pretty good. So,
it's wild, man.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's an epi.
That is what they call that. Yeah, I think that's good, guys. Again, next week we'll have episode 410. John's pick required viewing was 12 Monkeys.
12 Monkeys, yes.
And we're gonna do a Baltimore-centric episode. And again, we're gonna just do a quick scene mention for The Wire.
Yes.
So that we can shine a light on some other things, and maybe I'm gonna try to pick something like that. Maybe some people don't even realize has a Baltimore connection. 12 Monkeys is a good one. I don't think a lot of people.
That's a really good one.
So I'll try to stay with that trend. But yeah, that'll be next week. MoviesMovie.com is the website if you want to listen to past week's episodes. In actuality, all of our episodes are there. MoviesMovie.com also links to all the podcast platforms that you may want to listen to this podcast in, you know, whichever one you prefer. If you do that already, please leave a review or a comment or a rating, whatever it may offer you. Depending on where you go, I think there's different options there. But we would appreciate that, obviously. And youtube.com/moviesmoviepod if you want to do the video visual element. And if you do that, please subscribe, hit the bell so you get notifications when the new episodes come out. But we will see you next week, and hopefully we watch some really great Baltimore stuff to talk about next week. But until then, as always, you've made our day. Thanks.
Bye.